As a major research institution, Arizona State University offers the most online bachelor's degree programs, along with world-class faculty and dedicated support. Discover why ASU is ranked number one in innovation for 9 consecutive years. Tap to learn more.
Well, welcome back as we head into Hour 3 and send you on to your weekend. It's a delight to see this punim in front of my face. That means face in front of my face. That is Rabbi Pinchas Alush. He is back from Israel. He is the head rabbi at Congregation Beth Tefillah, which is House of Prayer over on Shea, where he says all are welcome, religious or not, Jewish or not. He is the host of the Rabbi Alush podcast on Apple Podcasts, A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E. Rabbi, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure being back and pleasure seeing your ponim.
Thank you. First of all, many in this audience keep your son, who is in the IDF, in their prayers, Yisroel Mordechai Chaim. Give us an update, please.
Well, thank you so much. It really, really means a lot. I came back from Israel, as you just mentioned, where I saw him. He was on a short break, and we were able to be together. He seems fine. Thank you for asking. Of course, he's been through a lot, but he's staying strong and positive, as all of his peers are. And it's just admirable to see their resilience, their determination, and their hope. It's something that we all should learn from.
Hope's a good word. It's the title of the national anthem of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling the story. I was on a jog the other day, and on the canal bank with a friend, non-Jewish friend, and in front of us walking were about 9 or 10 people, the same age as your son, dressed. The only reason I mention this is because of something I said and maybe shouldn't have, but dressed very scantily, very thinly, women carrying a flag of several flags of Palestine and I think a flag that said genocide. And we saw them because they were walking, we were running. And the person I was running with took her phone off of headset, and played it through the speaker at top volume, played the Hatikva as we ran by. And I had to make a comment, too. She took off into super speed, I asked her why later when we finally – I couldn't keep up. And she said I just didn't want anyone I would know or know me to be seen with that group of Nazis.
Mm.
Anyway, I yelled at the lady in front, try dressing like that in Gaza. She didn't like it. All right, Rabbi. That is thus concludes our foreign policy segment of the interview. Okay.
That's all right. Okay. I'm glad it was a monologue and you didn't let me.
Yeah. We'll suppress other dialogue on this. So every Saturday, as many regular listeners know, the Sabbath, the Jewish Sabbath, every Saturday, Jews across the world read a portion of the Bible, the Torah, and it's broken down every week. This week, we are in Exodus 38:21, last book of Exodus, last chapter of Exodus anyway.
That's correct.
Yeah. And it's titled Pekudei, which means amounts of. And it really kind of begins a series of chapters that are very specific and seemingly dry. But would you like to speak a little bit about Pekudei and what amounts of means, what we're talking about here?
Right, yes. So it's interesting because let's put it in context. This is now the fourth portion that speaks about the construction of the tabernacle in the desert. It's the fourth and final one. And Pekudei, as you just mentioned, means the enumeration because it enumerates all of the different vessels and utensils of that tabernacle. But what is interesting to me, at least, is that there's so much emphasis on the construction of the tabernacle and on all of its details. I mean, why does God have to even repeat the details that you already mentioned in the commandments to build them? And the answer, I think, is very, very telling. And it speaks of the way God looks at this world. And in many ways, it should be the way we look at this world. The details count. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the smallest things are really the biggest things.
I'm going to get into that at length. Let's start with the very first word that strikes us, and you mentioned it. It opens up. These are the records of the tabernacle of the pact in this case. I know there's some translation differences on that, but it comes to something like pact, which were drawn up at Moses' bidding. All right. First off, tabernacle's an interesting word in and of itself. Most people don't really know what it is. In Latin, interestingly enough, it's where we get the word tavern. I don't know if that helps, but a gathering of some kind. How do you define tabernacle in this case?
It's interesting. You're right, because the word tabernacle doesn't do the real word justice. In Hebrew, the word is mishkan. Mishkan comes from the word shekhinah, which means divine presence. The purpose of the tabernacle is to draw down the divine presence so that God can dwell there, truly dwell there, as a person would dwell in his home freely, unreservedly. That is the purpose of the Mishkan. Tabernacle, yes, maybe refers to a gathering of people focused on constructing an edifice that is greater than them, but doesn't quite speak of this idea that I'm doing this for God, to draw his presence down, and so that there can be a relationship between me and God and me.
And is it mobile?
And it's mobile.
Yeah.
That's right. Throughout the 40 years in the desert, they had to carry it, and not only carry it, but unpack it every time they encamped. That's another important detail, because sometimes they camped in places for a very short while, for a week, for a few days. And you would think, you know what? Well, you guys are off the hook now. You can leave.
Someone who spends a hotel overnight doesn't always unpack their
right,
suitcase.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. And so why the need? But God's commandment was to unpack the tabernacle each and every time. And the answer is because God was trying to teach us that the temporary is actually permanent.
Yeah.
And that those fleeting moments of life have to be treated as if they were the only moments of life, in which we have to be completely present and maximize their every second.
I'm going to return to that too. I'm glad you brought that down. Brought that up. Let's stay with that first sentence still, if I can. It's a pregnant first sentence. These are the records of the tabernacle, the Mishkan, the tabernacle of the pact, which were drawn up at Moses' bidding. Already we know two things. Something's interesting here, because typically things are not repeated for no purpose. And right within two words of each other, we get tabernacle mentioned twice. The tabernacle of the pact. Are there different tabernacles?
That's a great point. And in fact, the commentaries immediately jump on this. Rashi, the foremost commentary of the 11th century, also speaks of that. But my favorite take is that really it speaks of this two-way street that the tabernacle created. It's not just God dwelling among us. It's us also devoting ourselves to God. A real tabernacle can only exist if there's a true relationship, as we mentioned before. If it's just God providing for me whatever I need, or vice versa, if it's just me speaking to God, praying, and God is apathetic to me, then there's really no mishkan, no dwelling of any sort. A mishkan is when God builds a mishkan, but I also build one. And there in the middle, we meet.
Let me pick up on that when we come back. For the purposes of the audience, they should know what you and I know, which is we've never rehearsed any of these things. You never know what I'm bringing up.
No.
How do you know all this stuff is my question. How do you know all this? Just throw out these questions to you. Rabbi Pinchas Alouche, Alouche, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alouche is my guest. We like to close our Friday shows with him when he's in town to get everyone into a much more spiritually minded or higher level minded weekend, and ideally Sabbath, kind of a Sabbath mood, if you will, whether you commemorate it and celebrate it on Saturday or Sunday. Rabbi Alouche is discussing the last part of the book of Exodus with us today. And so the tabernacle, two-way street. Now, here's another interesting thing I draw out from this portion on Exodus, Rabbi. After relating each item's completion here in the assemblage of it, the Bible, the Torah, repeatedly, paragraph by paragraph, again and again, states that it was done, quote, exactly as God had commanded Moses. Exactly. So we have not only that it's as exactly emphasized, but we have this phrase again and again and again. Seems repetitive, too.
Right. You know, it reminds me of that one of my favorite quotes that says that the difference between a dream and a goal is a plan.
Okay.
So when God was commanding us to build the tabernacle, it was at the level of the dream. It was God's dream. It was perhaps our dream. But then when we actually executed his commandment in the exact fashion that he asked us to execute it, then that dream became a goal because we had a plan that was executed. And that's why the repetition. Also to teach us that very often, you know, we wake up in the morning and we have these big dreams for the day, or even on a grander scale, as children, we had big dreams. And when we hit the age of 24 or 27, we ask ourselves, well, what happened to those big dreams? Maybe they just were not given any plans. They weren't given any attention and any execution. And therefore, yeah, God says, even if you have a dream to build a tabernacle, in your own way, obviously, make sure you have a plan and make sure you execute it. When you do, that's when your dreams will become goals, but that's also when I will come and dwell with you.
I was reading a commentary that relates the notion of also the specificity, the exacting, exquisite care of every part of the assemblage here, that maybe a message is also drawn that we human beings as creations of God are also to be thought of, or we should think of ourselves as tabernacles, and that we should take a similar exquisite care with what God wants for us. And I wonder if you think that has merit as well.
Yes, that's very powerful what you're saying. You're right. You know, the Kabbalists, the Jewish mystics, speak actually of every item of the tabernacle referring to a different part of our bodies or of our beings. For example, the ark that was really at the epicenter of the tabernacle, where God spoke from. In fact, that ark also had the smashed pieces of the tablets that Moses threw on the floor. Well, that ark is the heart. And it has to be maintained too. And that's where God speaks to us from. Very often we hear voices from within, almost a gut feeling speaking. It's that heart, that ark that is speaking. So you're right. The mystics draw a parallel between that tabernacle in the desert to the tabernacle that is our beings. And we have to ensure that every part of that being is aligned with God and therefore becomes holy.
Let me stay on that for just a moment, because it's not only just exacting instruction as I read it, not only, you know, exquisite specific instruction, it's very focused. It's very one thing at a time. There should be no distractions or no, I don't know, what's the phrase of art that people use today when they try and do two things at once, you know? There should be none of that, you know? No multitasking.
Right.
Seems to me.
You're right. You're right, which is a powerful lesson for our age of distraction, as they call it. But you're right. When they put themselves to the task, and it's really one of the only times in their 40-year journey where they were united and focused to complete a task without distraction, as you put it. But when they were there building the tabernacle, executing its every commandment, they were there with such focus that nothing else in the world really mattered to them. And it's an important lesson. When we are focused on fulfilling our divine purpose, nothing else in the world should matter.
I had this realization this morning, thinking about this when I was, getting ready to come into the office, just, you know, dressing and stuff. I was thinking about, you know, how our minds wander an awful lot. Maybe the message here too, in all things, whether driving, whether taking care of ourselves, a family member, a child, being focused on a child with their homework, watching them at play or at leisure, or a spouse or a loved one. Not just one thing at a time, but truly no other, true focus on that one thing at a time. Don't let other thoughts affect you. Don't be distracted. That's how accidents happen. That's how even perhaps, dare I say, depression or other worries occur and enter and invade our minds. If you're focused right on whether you're driving or whether you're shaving or whatever you're doing, it's hard to be distracted. It's hard to be otherly engaged on thoughts that are not pertinent to what you're doing. It's hard to be depressed. It's hard to be worried, seems to me.
That's correct. Yes. Yes. And many ways, if I may add 2 seconds, it's also a lesson we learn from the travels of the Jewish people in the desert.
Okay.
That those travels were protected.
Okay.
No arrows from without.
Right.
Even animals from without were able to harm the Jewish people. Why? Because they were traveling. They were focused on getting to the promised land, and so must we.
I want to pick up on that, and I want to pick up on the body as a tabernacle when we come right back with Rabbi Pinchas Alush. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest, host of the Rabbi Alush podcast on Apple Podcasts, A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E, head rabbi at Congregation Beth Tefillah. Until I said it out loud, as the body is a tabernacle. Many know the phrase, the body is a temple. Think of your body as a temple. And this is not a Jewish source per se, but I wanted to read it to you anyway. I read it about 3 or 4 times a year, and I wonder if you might comment on it. It's actually from an evangelical at a commencement speech. He said, the problem is that how we disintegrate individuals, because we disintegrate mind, body, and spirit. And you disintegrate people. And when you disintegrate people, you cannot form integrated relationships toward others. Disintegrated people create disintegrated societies, precisely what we have done today. So to integrate, we need integrity. Integrity is wholeness. And anyone who's been in the Navy knows that if you get on board a naval ship, when the ship takes off, someone on the captain, speaking for the captain on the bridge, asks if there is watertight integrity. And someone goes through the ship and they check every single door so that every single door is seen as, is deemed to be waterproof, is sealed. And they go back and say, the ship has integrity. Integrity means every part of your body. So what we're kind of getting from the building and the carrying of the tabernacle here too, isn't it? Or the way we should look at ourselves as holy entities.
Yes, I mean, I love what you just quoted.
I thought you would.
Because it speaks of really a duality that must exist, and that is the wholesomeness or the integrity of the individual that thereby contributes to the wholesomeness of society. And in many ways, we are interconnected with society. And if we are broken, then society will be broken. So really, the work begins from within. First, focus on our personal integrity, and then the world can become a better place. And it's such a powerful message because, you know, we live in a society where teachers and politicians will tell us that we have to fight the bad from without.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to fight bigotry and sexism and racism. And that's all nice and great. And it's true also. But it begins within. No one speaks about, how about fighting your own evil inclination?
Yeah.
How about fighting your temptations?
Yeah.
How about fighting your seductions and healing your brokenness?
Yeah.
That's where it starts.
Yeah. There's a line from Helen Keller. She says, it is wonderful to see so many people denouncing Satan. But if people would spend half the energy denouncing Satan, loving one another, Satan would die by boredom.
Very good.
Yeah?
Very good. She might have taken it from the Jewish Midrash.
Yeah.
That speaks about our Abraham was such a man of kindness that when he lived in this world, the attribute of kindness was on a vacation. It didn't have to go and do its work in the world because Abraham was doing it on its behalf.
Right. Yeah. And that too is this issue of integrity and wholeness. I suppose what one sees from all the laws and the commandments, and even those that don't make sense, that don't make rational sense, there is a purpose to them. Or the way one comports themselves in, let's say, traditional orthodoxy. You see a certain dress code, you see certain reminders, That you are supposed to wear on your garments. You are supposed to keep signposts around you all the time to maintain this integrity. The easy ability to be distracted is omnipresent, and it takes a lot of work not to be.
That's correct.
It's not as if it's easy.
Right. Even King David in the book of Psalms, in Psalm 51, writes, "I have sinned in front of the Lord always." It's not that he was in a constant state of sin, but that he reminded himself that the possibility of sin is there.
Yeah.
And therefore, you have to be accountable and a person of integrity.
Which is why if you break one commandment, you end up breaking them all, we're told. Yes?
Yeah.
Rabbi Elushin, I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Rabbi Pinchas Alush is my guest. P-I-N-C-H-A-S, Alush, A-L-L-O-U-C-H-E, host of the Rabbi Alush podcast on Apple Podcasts, a few minutes each week that can change your lives. In your weekly newsletter, you put out five lessons you gleaned or thought important from your most recent trip in Israel, and I wrote them down. A little bit out of order, if you don't mind,
sure.
Because as long as we're on the issue of what was the word you used to describe the Kabbalah, mysticism, as long as we're on mysticism, I want to go to lesson number four. Citing the Tanya, you say, "Only our bodies divide us, our souls are one. Our differences come from our bodies, but deep inside we all stem from one divine soul. If only we could treat each other in such a way at all times."
Right. It's a very powerful.
Right to say that Tanya is mysticism too?
Yes.
Okay. I would you can say, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, it is. I would say it's applied mysticism.
Okay.
So it doesn't just stay in the heavens, but it really is translated to. It really, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned the Tanya. It's one of the foremost books of Jewish philosophy that is a deeply psychological book and perhaps one of the best. Analysis on the human condition.
Okay.
But it does speak there of how we all stem from one divine soul. After all, God is the creator, not just of the world, but of humanity. And God created this soul from which humanity came about. And humanity is expressed with different bodies. We each have our own features, our own personalities, our own bodies, even identical twins are different.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were to dig a little bit deeper, we would see that we came from the same united soul, which is really what this Tanya teaches. There is a oneness in creation. It's like someone once told me that he doesn't believe in one God. He believes in one, period. There's oneness in everything. We all stem from the same creator. And if we were able to treat each other in such a way, not to ignore the differences that exist, because everyone has a role to play, but really to treat each other as divine, then I think that the world would be a little bit different.
Everyone has a little divinity in them, at least, I would say. I mean, you know, I don't know if that's a Jewish concept or not to say it that way, but everyone has at least some spark of divinity in them. And, you know, I'm always challenged by the concept of how to deal with people I don't want to deal with or may not like. I try to remind myself, and I hope it's within the realm of good advice. I try to remind myself to try my best to see that whatever divine spark is in that person, either that or the child, because everyone was once a child and I think still has a little child in them too.
That's right. And maybe it's the same thing.
Maybe it's the same
thing. Maybe it's the same
thing. The innocence of a child is the divinity.
It's
the divine spark.
That's right.
Okay.
It's certainly divine. That I would
agree. You can get behind this?
Yes, yes. And look, and I think that even when we argue with people, because sometimes we have to, even when we disagree with people, sometimes we have to. We have to remind ourselves that we are doing it not for our egos, but so that that divinity in the person and my personal divinity can once again unite as one.
You know, that's a great point. People can be argumentative, either by disposition or by circumstance. And it's, you probably get this as often as I do. Someone says, "Should I write back such and such to this email or this text or whatever?" And I think it's probably a good idea to think what is the outcome of it? Is it worth it? Is it for a divine, or, you know, something even perhaps less than divine, but is it for a greater good purpose? Will it serve the good here? Or is it really just to kind of express, which means really to just outpour? Well, in a way, it could be, you know, just vomiting.
That's right.
Verbal vomiting.
Absolutely. And it changes the way we argue. I mean, I can't tell you how many times people sometimes write scathing emails against Israel, Judaism. And sometimes
me.
I have to, me too. And I have to ask myself, do I respond? And if yes, how should I respond? Just to win the argument?
Right.
That's my ego speaking.
Right. We don't need to win every argument because not every argument is important.
That's right. But I should respond sometimes so that we can, in a way, unleash that soul in that person and even in me. So, for example, I would invite that person to come to my home for Shabbat dinner. So fine, you don't like me. Maybe if you come a little bit closer, you'll find that there's divinity in all of it. I'll find your divinity, and then we'll unite on that plane. You know, they say that some stars are bigger than the sun. Most stars, actually. So how come they don't shine as bright as the sun? How come we don't see them as big as the sun? And the answer is because they're further from the sun. Mm. We are distant from them. If we were to come a little closer, we would see how big they were, or they are.
Is there something?
Same with human beings.
Yeah. I don't mean to take this too much further down, but is there something about sharing a meal with someone that's especially impactful in these kinds of relationships? It seems to me the idea of breaking bread or what have you, there is something about sharing a meal.
Yes. I think it unites us on that which unites us, not on that which divides us. So there's that power. But then it brings a certain emotional closeness, not just physical closeness, emotional closeness that enables then the divine soul to come out and start speaking.
I'll let you close on this thought. Heroism is where the ordinary meets the extraordinary. Heroism is where the ordinary meets the extraordinary.
Right. Because we often think that the heroes are the people that are born differently, you know, whether it's Superman and Spider-Man or whether it's heroes that we look up to. Well, I have a little secret for everyone. They were born just like me and you. They just decided to devote themselves to the extraordinary achievements of life. And that's what made them heroes. And that's what can make you and I a hero too. Let's stop being ordinary people living ordinary lives. But let's stop being ordinary people living extraordinary lives.
And it's within reach. Extraordinary sounds like a big word, but break it down. It's just a little extra.
That's right.
Just a little more than ordinary.
Very good.
Rabbi Pinchas Alush, thank you, sir. May you have a good Sabbath, a good Shabbos.
You too. Thank you.
That's a theme from the Green Hornet we're coming back with. That's funny, right after talking about superheroes. Welcome back. Portions of the show brought to you by our good friends at Y Refi. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest the letter Y, then refy.com. Or give them a call at 888-YREFI24. They helped do an extraordinary, speaking of extraordinary, subsidization of our March 26th event, Fighting for Freedom with Mike Gallagher, Brandon Tatum and myself, so that we've cut the ticket prices dramatically due to Y Refi's matching. They are a great company that offers a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and it's not correlated to the stock market or the Fed. Great actors in our community, as you can tell from their subsidizing of our event to make it more affordable for you all. With Y Refi, there are no fees. There's no attack on principal if you ever need your money back. Check them out. As I say, investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call them at 888-YREFI24. Big news week. It has been, and thanks for doing it all with us. We appreciate it and take none of it or you for granted. It's just as we were talking about with Ed Morrissey in the last hour, you think about how big the news was this week. The Robert Herr testimony as an example. I mean, it feels like it could have been 10 years ago or never. It was only 3 days ago because of the frenzy we are constantly put in with distraction after distraction after distraction. Try not to be. Is my motto, or one of my mottos. Try not to be distracted and try and focus on the durable. Mr. Bill, thank you. Young David, thank you. Terry and the rest of you, God bless you all. Until Monday, I'm Seth Leibson, and class is dismissed.
Navigating your path to financial freedom is now simpler than ever with Financial Well-Being Essentials powered by CrossFirst Bank. These educational tools are your guidepost to making informed decisions and achieving financial confidence. The suite of topics delves into the essentials and beyond, from savvy saving strategies to debt management, caring for aging parents, and more. Visit crossfirstbank.com/essentials to launch your journey toward a more secure financial future. That's crossfirstbank.com/essentials. Member FDIC.